I'm Kate Remington. I'm talking with Lucas Richmond, who's going to be the guest conductor of the Stanford Symphony on Saturday, February 9th, and Sunday, February 10th. And it's a wonderful program that gives a great overview of selections from opera, including a concert version of Porgy and Bess by Gershwin. And Lucas, it's great to have a chance to talk with you.
Well, thank you for having me, Kate. I appreciate it.
Now, you're currently the music director and conductor at the Bangor Symphony in Maine. And before we started rolling the recording, you mentioned that you'd been there for 9 years. And one of the things you really love about it is having the opportunity to conduct an orchestra that is such a huge part of the community. So is that something that you're looking forward to being part of with Stanford as well?
Absolutely. I've had a chance to spend some time in Stanford over the years. The first time was I was actually working on writing the score for a musical, and my collaborator had a home in Stanford, so I spent some time in the city and fell in love with it, and became certainly aware of the cultural aspects of Stanford, including, of course, the symphony. So it's a nice coming around in this way. I'm really looking forward to collaborating with the orchestra coming up on this music of Italian masters and Gershwin.
Yeah, it's really such an interesting program. Did you have a hand in choosing the pieces that are going to be performed?
Yes. Porgy and Bess had already been decided, but the first half was open. Basically, the idea was to have music by Italian composers, opera composers, and there are soloists on the second half. Donita Volkwein and John Fulton will be singing some arias and a duet on the first half. So really showing a full range of their singing prowess. And we've got, it's really been fun to put this together with music of Rossini, Donizetti, Catalani, Puccini, Leoncavallo, and Verdi. The wonderful thing is when you have a program like this, you can hear Gershwin's aspirations as a serious vocal writer. I mean, he had written so many songs for the Broadway stage, but in writing Porgy and Bess, he took on the task with full bore effort, just to write this grand opera, and he knew the music of the Italian masters. There's no question when you hear duets like "Bessie Is My Woman," that is you hear that soaring Italian ethic infused into Gershwin's writing.
It's really remarkable, and I've talked with composers who've written songs, and trying to make the music accompany the words in absolutely the most perfect way is so incredibly difficult. And you can hear how much Gershwin loved the language of Dubose Hayward's the libretto that became Porgy and Bess, and the way, you know, his turn of melody. So yeah, you're right. It's very, very interesting to have that kind of played off against these incredible Italian masters as well. And we should mention that this concert version of Porgy and Bess by Gershwin is going to be performed for the very first time with the Stanford Symphony. So congratulations on being able to conduct the premiere. That's really cool. Oh,
that's a lot of fun. Well, the orchestration was prepared by Robert Russell Bennett, and the orchestration is just, I mean, it shows off the orchestra as well. We've got the Greenwich Choral Society singing, so it's you got the whole full palette of voices and orchestral sounds working in this context, and also the gift, the melodic gift. It's easy to put a melody together in a very perfunctory way, but it takes a real special composer to be able to craft a melody that matches the words so well that it becomes something eternal. And I think that's what we have in the music we're presenting on the first half, and then that Gershwin has done with Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, and what's I was so happy to see that aria from La Vallée by Catalani, which it's one of my favorites, Andro Lotana. It's just, it's so tragic. La Vallée's about to throw herself off a cliff. And it's one of those gorgeous pieces that you just don't get to hear very often. So I'm really pleased that you chose that one.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Yeah. And you know, people think of we're ending the first half with Verdi's Triumphal March and chorus from Aida. So it's big and grand and very dramatic, but to show the complete opposite end of the dynamic spectrum with the humming chorus of Puccini from Madame Butterfly, I love that contrast and that. I mean, Puccini was a dramatist to the nth degree, and knew how to write music that he would be in your face, but most often it was very understated, and in so being understated would make it that much more heart-wrenching and powerful of an experience in the theater.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience. And for people who maybe aren't as well acquainted with operas, they don't necessarily get to go to the Met every week or every month. This is a great introduction because all of these are just absolutely gorgeous pieces, and so many of them will be very familiar as well. So
yes,
good choices there. That was really great. I know at this point in your career, you have done this just hundreds and hundreds of times, stepping in as a guest conductor. And one of the things I'd love to know is how you approach it, because you've got so little rehearsal time, and especially when you're standing in front of an orchestra that you've never conducted before. I mean, it's a little like a blind date, I suppose. And so I'm just wondering what you do to connect with the orchestra and make the most of the limited rehearsal time that you have.
It's imperative to establish a rapport of respect in the very beginning. Not that I enforce that the musicians should respect me, but in fact that they know that I respect what they bring to the table. They have a way of playing together, and it's my job to come in with a certain amount of vision, but also with the joy of collaboration. Let them do what they do so well, and just basically guide all the performances to one unified path. I come into rehearsal and everything that I do with a smile. I think there's not enough of a smile in our lives. Music making should be joyous. So when I'm working with a new ensemble, especially, I establish from the very beginning that this is about the joy of music making, and it is not about my enforcing a certain way that this needs to be done. But in fact, that's what the wonder of live music making is. There are many, many different ways to do it, and we're all going to experience this together with a smile.
That is such a wonderful approach, and I'm sure it's still fairly rare, although you don't hear quite so many stories these days of conductors throwing their batons at a particular player. But it's got to be a great way of really getting the orchestra on your side and working as a cohesive unit. And I know you've done a lot of recording of session orchestras for film scores.
Yes.
And that must present its own challenge, because very often they're kind of pickup orchestras, and so they haven't played together a lot. And so how do you approach that unique challenge?
Well, I need to be as efficient as possible so that my technique is a lot of conductors will get on the podium and not necessarily take responsibility for sending sending mixed messages. I take responsibility for the way that I use my technique. And if something is not, if ensemble is not together, I take the responsibility for that, because then I haven't done my job properly. So in the case of recording sessions, I have to be absolutely efficient and clear in everything that I do. So that's part of my gig, as it were. to be efficient and be kind and do everything with grace. That's I guess my MO.
That's fantastic. You've written a wonderful blog about joy and leadership. And I think it's really wonderful when you get to the point with an orchestra that they respect you as a leader, and yet you are kind of one of them, too. So that's a great point to
make. Well, thank you. I'm glad you read that.
You've also composed many, many pieces for kids. And, you know, that's a thing that so many of us who are involved in classical music in one way or another is trying to work out, how do you get kids to love classical music? And when you're conducting one of your pieces, what do you hope a kid will experience in the concert like that?
Kids like everything until they're told that they don't like it. I think, you know, children will come into listening to things with an absolutely blank slate. Of course, if it's music that scares them, right? You know, if it shocks them, then they'll say, "I don't like that." But they're open to just about anything, and that's what's so wonderful. In the case of educational concerts, the music that I've written for young people's concerts and all kinds of things with my orchestras I've worked with in the LA, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the Pittsburgh Symphony, the Knoxville Symphony. The programs we put together are teaching about the joy of music to kids and making it as interactive an experience as possible. It's hard to relegate music to the experience of just sitting quietly in a seat and not being able to participate. Music is, it's sound waves. It's the waves get into our body, and to squelch the instinct of participation is counterintuitive to the educational process when you're dealing with kids. So much of the music that I write is actually very interactive, and showing children that we all have music in us, and we all can make music in some way or another. We all have a voice. We can all sing. We can all play on a drum. We can all participate, and we all need music in our lives in one way or another.
Oh, that's really brilliant. And I love that, because kids are so used to doing other things that are interactive, whether it's sports or video games. They have much more control with the things that are entertaining to them. And so, yeah, music should be like that too. So that's really cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. Music is, we take it for granted. And I've said this in the past in various things. I participated in a thing called Symphony of Hope, the Haiti Project. And it was really especially touching to me. This is a recording that came about after the Haiti earthquake, when 25 composers in Los Angeles came together and wrote essentially variations on a Haitian folk song called Wangolo, and it was turned into a five-movement symphony. We had an 82-piece orchestra in Los Angeles. Everybody donated their services, the copyists, a film crew, the studio, to raise money for the victims of the Haiti earthquake. And it became very apparent to me at that in that whole process that in the face of tragedy, the first things we do is we want to reestablish food, water, shelter. But what brings back our humanity is music. When people feel like they can sing again or turn on the radio, that brings that one element of, okay, maybe everything's going to be okay, maybe we'll be able to come back from this. It's a reminder that we are able to express ourselves in ways that are on a human level. Music is what makes us human. It's what's unique to us as human beings, to be able to express ourselves in this very, very magical way.
Well, let's say you are offered the position of conductor for the Stanford Symphony. What what sort of plans would you have to keep the orchestra relevant in the community, or maybe broaden its appeal or its outreach?
Part of that process is me getting to know the city better and getting to know the musicians better and see what the needs are of the community. The most successful orchestras in the United States are the ones that have identified best with what the needs of their community are. I will tell you that in my experience, both with the Knoxville Symphony as music director there and in Bangor, two projects that are very, very near and dear to my heart, of course, are music and education and music and wellness.
Hmm.
In both cities, it was part of my mission to create a program in which our musicians could play in healthcare facilities and bring music out of the concert hall into the community in ways that touch people in their daily lives and show the power of music as a healing force.
Wow.
So that has been tremendously successful. And what ends up happening is that once you've done that and you've established the connection in those kinds of venues, then when people are people are much more inclined to come hear concerts in the concert hall when they've gotten to know the musicians intimately through some of the most devastating experiences in their lives. And, you know, it's a frightening thing to have to be in a healthcare facility. And if we are able to ease that process of that they're going through in healing and diagnosis, if we can give them a respite, the people appreciate that. There are things that music can do as a healing force that nothing other can do.
That sounds like a remarkable program. And Lucas, we are so looking forward to hearing you at the helm of the Stanford Symphony. And thank you so much for giving us a chance to get to know you a little bit better.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to meeting everybody and doing this program of Italian Masters in Gershwin. It's going to be a lot of fun.